Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Movie scores and soundtracks set a film's tone, the mood, the energy. Often, the score is a kind of warning. That is, of course, John Williams' theme to Jaws, a movie directed by Steven Spielberg. 2 years later, Spielberg used a similarly bass-heavy track to clue the audience about another scary unknown, an alien life form in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Like most of popular culture, film scores go through trends, phases in which every movie sounds similar. Not something moviegoers can quite put their finger on, but once it is pointed out, it is everywhere.
It's called Inception. I'm ready.
That noise, by the way, is called Brahm. Adrian Daub is professor of comparative literature and German studies at Stanford University. He wrote about this particular and pervasive trend in movie soundtracks for long reads. Adrian, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you.
Okay, so how'd I do with my Brahm?
That's pretty good. I must say, while I was writing the article, I never really said it out loud. And now that I'm discussing the piece, I'm really having to figure out how to vocalize that.
Let's hear it from the author.
Brahm.
I've always heard it or thought of it as the Inception sound. What is its origin?
It entered public consciousness and it entered seemingly every single movie trailer out there with Inception. But there are, of course, sort of earlier soundtracks that use sort of horn blasts. What sets, you know, Brahm apart is the sort of very synthetic, very sort of aggressive beginning of the sound that I think is sort of new.
Who produced it originally or created it?
Well, it was written or created for Inception by Hans Zimmer, the composer, but that's where there's already some disagreement. The sound appears to have been in the script, and Zimmer based it on a song that is actually played in the film itself. It's a song by Edith Piaf that the characters use, if you recall the movie, to jolt themselves sort of out of dreams. And it's fairly unclear exactly how much of the song, how much of that sound is sampled, and how much of that sound is simply created in studio.
All right, so you mentioned now it's on seemingly every trailer. Here is just a small portion of this sound from a montage of probably dozens of movie trailers. Now, that's from a minute and 46 worth of Brahms. You know, that was just a small portion. It does feel like everywhere. It's everywhere once you notice it. Why is that?
Well, I mean, Hollywood goes through these phases and goes through these fashions. And trailer scoring in particular, of course, is not the place where people, pay a lot of attention, I mean, as viewers. And so basically, it's maybe a little bit more susceptible to modish or faddish thinking. But I do also think it works really well with a particular kind of blockbuster filmmaking and trailer making that has become very dominant, right? The visual equivalent to the Brahm is basically the fade to black, right? The fact that instead of sort of the trailer telling you a coherent story, you get these amazing special effects shots where, you know, one giant thing slams into another giant thing, and then it sort of fades to black again. And this is that's of course a style of trailer that rewards, you know, not using a big melodic hook, but instead, you know, something that is adaptable and portentous and kind of mysterious. And that's, of course, what Brahm is.
I spoke in the introduction about the theme from Jaws and how those bass notes are supposed to make us feel. So what clues is Brahm giving us about what we're watching on the screen?
I think that in some way, Brahm invades our privacy as movie viewers. There is a tendency with Brahm to use on-screen noise and use it in the soundtrack. And it turns out that the distinction between, you know, the soundtrack, music that is sort of there but no one on screen can hear, and on-screen sound, right, that everybody in the picture can hear, is kind of important to our feeling of filmgoers that A, this isn't fully real, and B, that there are certain rules to the fiction. And Brahm sort of shreds that. It's not the only sound that does that. If you listen to the soundtracks to some modern thrillers, for instance, the Jason Bourne movies, they do something similar with a sort of garbled electronic noise where you can't quite decide, is this actually something the composer put there, or is that the sound designer doing something with the scene? Is Jason Bourne physically hearing this sound, or am I?
You talk about this specifically in Jaws in your essay, that first scene on the ocean, the first attack. Why is the score and the sound design so important in that case with that scene?
Well, the sound designers and John Williams staged this really canny handoff. We start out with these sounds of the ocean, which are really sounds that if you, you know, were underwater, you'd hear. And then as the camera starts that very famous move where it sort of starts taking on Jaws' point of view, all that noise fades out in favor of the famous half-step theme. And the effect of that is essentially that we sort of get a very subtle signal saying you're leaving the ocean that you know and you're entering Jaws' ocean.
I'm speaking with Adrian Daub about the sound Brahm and how it invaded Hollywood and changed the way that we listen to movies. So do you think that registers for us on a conscious level that this is pretend, this is not pretend in the world of movies?
I think it must, yes. I think there is something, and I mean, all of us can sort of check this on ourselves. Brahm is unnerving, enervating, really quite upsetting sometimes, right? The Inception trailer, I think, was copied so much because it kind of freaked you out when you first heard it. And my guess, it's not about the pitch, it's not about the way the sound is produced, it is about the fact that it sort of violates certain conventions of how we've been taught that film sound should behave, right? Film sound is something that we think so little about, right? It's a sonic vocabulary that we as viewers are incredibly ignorant of in some ways, right? I mean, the fact that, I mean, just if you want to, you know, do a little experiment, listen to doors closing in a movie and you realize it sounds nothing like any door you've ever heard, or the knives that make sounds in horror movies, right? But we've accepted that. Whereas if visually films were to stray from realism or from, you know, being, you know, fully mimetic to the same degree, we'd turn off the TV. We'd say this is no longer real.
But still, they work on our brain somehow. I mean, a successful film score is something we can hum. You know, anyone can on the street can hum Star Wars or sing a little bit from the Frozen song, right?
Right, but we can't hum Brahms, yeah.
Right. Well, that's what is so funny, because filmmakers have kind of seized on this thing that everyone sounds a little bit ridiculous, even calling it Brahms, when they're describing it. But why do you think everyone's using it? Is it a lot more on the nose? Does it communicate a lot more than subtlety, for example, in a film?
Well, in the article, I sort of came to the conclusion that part of it has to do with a changing economy of prestige around films. These soundtracks are no longer made for the same mode of consumption that, you know, the John Williams ones were. We're less likely to buy these scores on CD or record. We are less likely to hear them in concert halls. We are far more likely to hear them as techno remixes in a club. We're far more likely to hear them used in advertising. And my sense is that just changes the kind of soundtrack sound that ultimately gets rewarded in Hollywood, right? The kind of sound, the kind of theme that starts traveling.
Well, maybe 10 years ago, it was every trailer beginning with "In a World."
In a World. That was like 20 years ago. Yeah, that's right.
But we became aware of it, and they don't use it anymore. Now that we're becoming aware of Brahms, is it on its way out?
I think it can't be that long lived, but I think there are subtler features to it that are going to endure. I think, for instance, the Mr. Hyde to the Dr. Jekyll of Brahms are these very simple motifs, sort of very minimalist motifs that are also all over, for instance, the Marvel blockbusters. And my sense is that stuff's going to stick around even once Brahms has sounded its last Brahms.
Adrian Daub, he's a professor of comparative literature and German studies at Stanford University. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much, Virginia.
He's also author of 4 books on German thought and culture in the 19th century, as well as co-writing a book called The James Bond Songs, Pop Anthems of Late Capitalism. You'll find a link to read his essay for Long Reads, Brahms, the Sound That Invaded the Hollywood Soundtrack. The link is at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.